nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, and this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Happy Monday to you. It is September 14th, 2020. September 14, 2020. In an hour or so, we're going to talk with Dr. Mark Cercas. He's here on the second Monday of each month. And that would be today. We got a good week for you. Dr. Gerald Smith tomorrow. We're going to have somebody else tomorrow too. That's kind of in the works. And then also on Wednesday, talk to an interesting lady, and she has some curious theories about the upcoming presidential election and what are some of the forces behind this. And then we'll also do a thing on money on Wednesday. So we've got a full week for you. And if you care to join the show, you can always do it. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. You'll see the slide up here. This is a little picture of Danny and Wanda King. They have a homesteading place in Tennessee, and in Mississippi, rather. It's about 30 miles north of the Gulf Coast, and I think they're in Wiggins, Mississippi right now. They're on their cell phone. They can't get internet out where they are, but we thought we'd talk to them. They have a very, very nice life and a wonderful website and a whole thing that they do, and it's called Deep South Homesteading, and so you can kind of figure out what that's about. And they've got books, and it might be a real nice resource for you to check into, as many people are thinking about, what's going to happen? What if something really gets weird around here in the next 3, 4, 5 months? We like to prepare for the worst and hope for the best, and we don't do fear porn around here. But it's real possible that anything could happen. And that doesn't say much, right? It's real possible that anything could happen in the next 2, 3, 4 months. We just don't know. There's so many different forces that are out there playing with the geopolitical, political, and financial landscape that, pretty much anything is possible. And we're gonna talk to some people in the next few months and talk about this. And we're going to check in and see if we can find Danny and Wanda. Good morning, you two. Can you hear me okay?
Good morning, Patrick. We hear you just fine.
Well, hello, Patrick.
Hello there, Wanda. Well, my goodness, I've never been to Wiggins, Mississippi, but I sure want to go.
Not today with
the hurricane. Not today with a storm coming in.
Really? So, you guys have Sally coming in, huh?
Yes, it should be coming in here late tonight through the day tomorrow.
Are they expecting a whole lot of turmoil with this hurricane?
Well, they're talking about 60 to 80 mile an hour winds with up to 15 inches of rain.
Yow! Really?
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. And now your place, where is it in relation to Wiggins, where you are?
We are about 15 miles southwest of Wiggins.
So you're going to be, your place is going to be right in Sally's path, kind of?
Yes, we're right over, the eye will probably come real close to us.
Wow. So what kind of concerns or precautions have you been able to kind of do before this thing comes in?
Well, mainly it's just we went around making sure everything's picked up. We took a tree down in front of the house yesterday that had some dead spots in it, so we just went ahead and cut it down, cut it up into pieces, and got it cleaned up. I mean, basically it's just stuff like that. Anywhere you know there's a tree over a fence that don't look too good, you try to get it down so the cows don't get out.
Yeah.
And then there's still no guarantee.
And then we take everything that could blow away. Like, we took my hummingbird feeders. We took the swings, tables, chairs. We move all that, flip it, attach it to something, just so we don't have to pick up stuff.
Yeah. How long have you all really been out there? And you don't even get internet much out there, right? So you had to come into Wiggins to do the show?
Yes. We don't have any internet hardly at all. Even though we have satellite internet, it still does not work where we're at.
Oh, it does?
It's bad. Cell phone's almost non-existent.
Yeah, the cell phone doesn't work. We always tell people we live in the sticks, singular. Most people say they live in the sticks, plural. No, we live in the sticks, singular.
Sticks, singular. And what's the name of the little town you live?
Perkinson.
Perkinson, Mississippi.
Yes.
My goodness. And tell folks about what you do out there. Just give them an idea about the size of your house and your land and, well, how you spend your time.
Well, our home is about a 2,000-square-foot home. It's a country Victorian I built many years ago. Right now I have 10 acres left. We had sold a lot of the other prior to that because we did not want to be in debt with what's coming in this country, so we got ourselves completely out of debt.
Hmm.
And we raise cattle, the small miniature breed, the Dexters. We have those there.
Mm-hmm.
We raise chickens for our eggs and stuff, and we butcher most of our own meat. We raise everything we eat. We don't,
as far as
vegetables and fruits and stuff like that, we do not go to the grocery store and buy food to eat. We might buy commodities from the grocery store.
And Wanda's junk.
And Wanda likes a few little snack things every now and then.
Wanda's junk. Well, you got to have some junk food, Wanda. I mean, come on. Right?
That's a junk occasion.
Yeah. But other than that, we smoke our own meat and stuff like that. We try to, cure our own bacon and things of that nature. We basically live off of our homestead.
My goodness. And how long have you been doing that, you two?
Me and Wanda have been doing it only for 7 years. Now, I've done it most all my life. My wife, prior to her, had passed away. But I've pretty much done this most all my life.
And Wanda, before Danny, what were you doing?
I was raising 5 kids. I homeschooled. I had home births. I did can some. I always preserved my peas and beans and stuff, but I froze most everything prior to Danny. I grew up with a garden. My parents were gardeners. My kids grew up with veggies and stuff, but we also did a lot of grocery store stuff, but I was one of those that did the homeschool, home birth, all the 9 yards before I met Danny.
My goodness. So you switched over from freezing more to canning after Danny?
Yes, Danny cans most everything. When I met him, we started canning. We have probably 3,000 jars or better of stuff canned.
Whoa.
And we can at least 1,000 a year.
My goodness. Now, I was in the spaghetti sauce business years ago, and we had a very popular spaghetti sauce sold around the country, and the pH of that was about 3.9, right, mainly tomatoes, and all we did was put it in about 180 degrees, put on the lid, right, the lid would suck down with cold water, and we were good to go because of the pH, right? So, Danny, you understand that, right? So...
Yes.
But how do you can all this other stuff, vegetables and all that, where the pH is higher? How do you keep it in the jar without exploding?
Everything's pressure canned. The only thing that's allowed to be water bath, like you're talking about, are acidic fruits and tomatoes. That's basically about all you can do. You do your jellies and jams, your fruits like tomatoes, pickles. Things like that you can water bath, but everything else has to be pressure canned.
You have to buy a pressure canner in order to do vegetables and meat.
Yes.
Do not ever water bath vegetables and meat.
I see. So the pH of the product determines whether or not it is just a water bath, like I described, that my grandma used to do, right? She would cook tomatoes, put a little basil, she'd put it in a mason jar, put on the lid, set it on the counter, and it would keep for, I don't know, well, it never lasts long, but several years for sure, right?
Right. We've had some stuff last many years.
Many years, because of the pH. What is the cutoff of the pH where you have to do the pressure canning?
Well, we like to say a 5% acidity. Anything that's less than 5% acidity, we pressure can.
Really? Interesting.
Yes.
I didn't realize you could do 4.5, 4.6, 4.7 with a water bath. What kind of a vegetable would that be? Something in the high fours?
Well, that all depends on what kind of amount of vinegar you mix in with something, or what the pH of that particular fruit is.
One thing I've done is okra.
Okra.
You can take okra and slice it up. You mix up water. We have a video on this with water and vinegar, and I can't remember salt. I think it's the only ingredients. You make a brine, boil it, pour it over the fresh okra in a jar, and you don't even have to water bath.
Yeah, you don't have to water bath that.
So okra is one that is a little different. It's kind of like you're making a vinegar, but it's limited. But okra is one veggie that can be done that way.
But if we're using vinegar or citric acid or lemon juice to acidify a product, doesn't that really drastically change the taste of it?
Not really, because that's what kind of threw me with the okra she's talking about. Because I was like, I told her, I said, I don't know if I care about an okra that tastes like vinegar.
Right.
But once you take it out and drain it and then fry it, batter it, fry it, it doesn't have that vinegary taste to it.
It's actually
better than it is fresh.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
So you actually take the okra out of the can and then batter it up and fry it, like fried okra.
Yes.
Yes.
That's great. Where do you have all your videos for people to look?
Deep South Homestead on YouTube.
Okay, Deep South Homestead on YouTube. So we'll put your YouTube channel link on the show page. And you go through, Wanda, a lot of the whole canning thing?
Yes, I have a canning playlist on Deep South Homestead. And then we have Crazy Days. It's CrazyDazes, which is my channel. And I do a lot of canning over there also.
And what's the name, Crazy Days?
Yes.
Crazy Days. Do you just get crazy sometimes, Wanda, and that's what you do?
Yeah, because I have a weird sense of humor, I guess, and sometimes it comes out.
I see. So we have Deep South Homestead on YouTube and also Crazy Days, right? Crazy Days.
Yeah.
Yes.
D-A-Z-E-N.
D-A-Z-E-N. If you all have a question for two folks that are in the real, they live the life that you and I just kind of talk about, and it's Danny and Wanda King, deepsouthhomestead.com. This is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. Well, so was it ever in your vision, you two, to do the whole solar thing and get off of the grid? And talk about that, and what do you do for water where you are?
Yes, we've built a cabin on the backside of our property that is completely off-grid. I was in the construction business for 26 years, owned my own company, so I've completely wired this cabin just like I would for a conventional home, but I also set it up for a DC system in it, and we have portable, you call them power stations right now, because we haven't quite got the grid system set up yet for the solar. We just take the 1500 watt power stations that we have, some 500, some 300, some 100, and some 1500 watt power stations, and we plug them into where the electrical panel is, and they actually run the cabin for us right now. And we are actively looking for a company to work with on a complete solar system with a battery bank and everything to put up on it, so that we can run refrigerator and everything else that we need to be able to be comfortable in the cabin. And the water, we have, right now we have two wells. We don't believe in community or municipal water systems, because they put fluoride and chlorine and all these other different chemicals in them. So we have our own water systems at our own property. We've hand dug one of our wells. We have a
rain catchment
system on the cabin. We have another well that was drilled for us. We're looking for a solar system to go in one of our wells to be able to pump our water from the use of the solar system rather than having to have electricity.
Excellent. So what kind of water are you getting out there? What's the TDS of the water? Do you know?
It's not really alkaline, but it's not hard water at all. It's not soft and it's not hard. It's probably some of the better. People who've been to our place have said that that's some of the best water they've actually ever drank.
Wow. So the minerals, do you think, are absorbable or digestible, Danny, in the water?
Yes. The only issue we face with our water is the iron content is a little bit high in it. But other than that, all the other stuff is really, really beneficial.
Mm-hmm. And that helps me because when I met Danny, I was deficient in iron. I was on the doctor done told me they wanted to put me in the hospital to give me a blood transfusion type thing because my iron was so low. But I put them off, and in the meantime, I met Danny, and we got married, and I moved out here, and I've never had an iron issue whatsoever since I'm moving out here at all.
Is that right? Is that right? Yeah. Yeah, some people get too much iron, too. It's crazy. You know, it's a... And they actually go and give blood, you know, because they got too much iron.
Right.
Danny and Awanda King are with us. You two stay right there, okay? We're going to do a little break, okay? We're going to have a commercial, and then we're going to be back with them. If you have a question, please come in and join us. What fun, huh? Man, I'm going to go visit. Okay, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. I'm glad you're here. We have lots of really nice products that we offer for sale. We kind of promote products that we think that are just like really good, and not only think, but we use which is pretty cool. And we know the source of all of these folks, and this is one here that I think is just pretty fascinating. It's called Pearl Sim. And it's a product that was developed by Dr. Willen Chu. She's a quantum physicist from China. And it was kind of she knew early on that she wanted to do some kind of a pearl product when she was a little girl. I mean, you hear these stories and it's like, whoa. And this product is from pure pearl. So it's a living source, and that's very important because we're not real big on taking products that are made in a laboratory. The body has a hard time with them, especially calcium. You know, the research and the literature shows that these calcium things that people have been taking and still take, God love them, they go to Walmart and get these big calcium things from rocks, and they just end up in the wrong spot. This is one of the calciums. It's not all calcium, but it's a lot of calcium will go into your bones where you want it because it's a living source. So you know, there's about 1,000 milligrams of pure calcium. No, not the other minerals, but just the calcium in a teaspoon of pearl sim. People have asked me this. So just 1,000 milligrams of calcium in the pearl sim. And then you can brush your teeth with it and take it internally. Listen. Previously, we talked with Dr. Rulin Zhu about using pearl sim on your teeth.
You have to experience it. Believe it.
Yeah, you do. That's what I've been saying to my listeners. I keep saying, can't even explain this. Just buy it. Just click on it. Buy some. Trust me. Just trust me. And you're going to like the way your teeth look. That's what I keep telling.
Dentists, they did an experiment on their clients, and they literally prove, and they literally show the picture every day. You know, when they take it in a few days, their tooth literally become, like you said, like a pearl, like a pearl. And it looks so beautiful and really white and shiny. Yeah, it really works. And it's also scientifically proven by the experiment. And he literally proved it is not only good for your teeth, he also proved it's also good for your gum.
Try some of this pearl sim. I think you're going to love it. You can try it internally as well. Helps with sleep. Great way to get absorbable calcium, and also on your face. You'll see the green ad there, the beautiful green container. Get the capsules or the powder. Pearlseum, click and order, oneradionetwork.com. We're talking with Brandon Amalani, and he is the man who brings us the Blue Shield technology to keep us all those little EMFs from doing harm to our body. Mr. Brandon, the Blue Shield is a really beautiful little cube, right? That's the main product. And how does this work?
Well, the cube essentially sends out signals into the environment that entrain the body. So the body is affected by all these electromagnetic fields in the environment. Uh-huh. And when Blue Shield's introduced into the environment, the body starts sympathetically resonating with it. And what we found over 30 years of development is that the body prefers the algorithm, the frequency range, the randomization of frequencies that are exposed into the environment, and the body stops attacking EMF or perceiving the EMF as a threat. And what this does is it normalizes white blood cell count, and it also starts to reduce inflammation markers from the body trying to attack the EMF. Wow. So essentially what's happening is that the body is basically renormalizing and reallocating immune power to the body, and it makes the body stronger and more well-regulated.
Good job, Brandon. That's an excellent explanation of how this technology works. It's called the Cube, the Blue Shield. See the ad on the front page. Use promo code ONERADIO for a 10% discount. Get yourself one. Take care of the whole house. That's Blue Shield right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com.
If you're watching on video, you can see a picture of Danny and Wanda King, Deep South Homesteading, talking about their life, how they do it. I'm just kind of just in awe of you all, and just to be able, I don't know, how should I say, to be as free as independent as you are.
It is a life that is very rewarding, I can say that.
Very rewarding. We enjoy each day because we don't have to answer to anybody. We don't have a job that we have to go to. We get up, we eat our breakfast, we head out the door, do what we want to do. If we want to come in and rest, we come in and rest. We built two ponds recently and stocked them with some fish and waiting on this rain to fill them up. And Danny and I love to just sit and watch the fish, and we can do that.
Oh, that's great. What kind of fish are you going to have?
Well, one pond we stocked with catfish and brim, and the second pond we stocked with a hybrid bass and a two different types of sunfish. One that's called a brim, and the other one's called a red ear, which is actually a shellcracker.
Hmm. Do you have to feed them, or do they just kind of, can they live off the land there?
Well, the catfish one we do feed because we are wanting to have them for eating purposes. Now, they will feed on the brim that we put in there, but the back pond that we did with the bass and the brim, we don't really feed them hardly because we load that pond up with minnows. We go about every 2 weeks and buy several hundred of these little minnows and put in the pond for them to feed on until the ecosystem in the pond gets to be what it needs to be.
And then do you eat these guys too, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How big do they get before you eat them? I guess you could just whenever you need them, huh?
Well, the recommendation is to give the pond a year, mm-hmm, before you actually start fishing in it. Now, the catfish, we will probably start harvesting them when they're around 1 to 1.5 pounds because that's probably the best eating size for them. The back pond with the brim and the catfish, with the brim and the bass, that'll just be when we decide we want to eat some fish out of it. We have to take so many fish a year out of it in order for it to not become overstocked.
Uh-huh.
Ecosystem to start working, yeah, and for them to start raising, and so that one doesn't overpower the other.
Yeah.
And you rely on just the rain. Does the water evaporate without rain in the pond?
Both ponds are spring-fed from underground, so they'll automatically keep about 5 foot of water in them.
Wow.
But anytime it rains, they fill up with water without any problem. And we in the heat of the summer here, and when it gets to be about 100-something degree heat index, which it does quite often, you do have some evaporation. That's why we look for our rains every couple of weeks. We like to get a good rain just to keep the pond level, to maintain its level.
So the springs, was that one of the factors when you chose to get to land? You knew there were springs on the property?
Yes.
That's a big deal, isn't it, for people listening that want to move out and do similar to what you guys are doing, try to find some land with a spring, huh?
Yes, anytime I do a consultation with anyone talking about looking for land or anything, the number one issue is water sources, because you want at least two water sources on a piece of property. A creek or a spring is probably the best that you can get, but you want to also make sure that you can have a well drilled, you have water right, stuff like that, because water is key.
Yeah, and do you have enough roof coverage to get plenty of rainwater?
Oh, yeah. We don't have any problem with that.
Uh-huh.
You have too much water sometimes.
Sometimes we have too much, yeah.
And with Sally coming in the hurricane, you guys are going to have a lot of water. And how big of tanks do you have for your water collection?
At the cabin right now, we only have the one 300-gallon. We're trying to look for... probably want to get up to close to 1,000 gallons on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have two 10,000 here, guys. Two 10,000. And, you know, that's just been my sole source of water for 20 years. I think we only ran out one time. One time in 20 years.
That's not bad.
We have the wells, so we don't really worry about rain catch that much. It's mainly for watering plants
right.
and stuff.
Yeah.
And at the cabin, we do have the well run there, so if we need water, we're still there. But we also have an Alexa Pure at the cabin that we use for drinking water. So that way we're filtering our water at the cabin.
And it's been a long time, but I don't even know. But I know that those 10,000-gallon ceramic tanks were, the name is escaping me exactly what they're made out of, but it's good stuff. It's not toxic, but they were quite expensive too. But it was all in the package when we built the home, so we used borrowed money, so we were able to do it. But they are expensive to get those big tanks, aren't they?
The large tanks can be quite expensive, but you know, Patrick, it's like I tell everyone that I talk to. You know, what is your health worth to you?
You can pay
a doctor. Or you can pay all these high insurances and doctor bills and stuff like that. Or you can just take care of yourself and provide yourself with good, healthy stuff.
That's right. That's right. Fiberglass. That's fiberglass tanks. Yeah.
Fiberglass. Yeah, probably a coated fiberglass. Yeah.
And they're nice tanks. Danny and Wanda King are with us. So talk a little bit about what you grow and how you maximize your minerals in the vegetables.
Well, mostly we've got like seven different gardens.
Seven.
We have two large greenhouses.
Three.
We have one small greenhouse and two large ones that we're actively at our age. We're both right at, I'm 60, Wanda's fixing to turn 60. We're trying to bring everything in from the seven gardens and intensely grow inside these greenhouses where we can make sure we're growing something year-round. We're experimenting with the dwarf fruit trees in one greenhouse because we're having so much trouble with pest problems outside in the south down here. So we're able to grow lots of really good fruits in one greenhouse. And we're intensely growing other vegetables in the greenhouse because when we grow in greenhouses, we can control the soil pH, we can control the nutrients in the soil, we can control the water in the soil, we can control the insect population a lot better, and the temperature and the humidity, all that stuff can be controlled better in these greenhouses. And we end up with a lot richer fruit, a lot more mineral-dense fruits, vegetables than we normally would if we grew them outside.
We have containers. We've done raised beds. Our carrots are usually in raised beds.
Yeah.
Our pineapples are on the hugel bed, hugel culture bed. What else? We've got multiple fruit trees.
Yeah.
There's almost any kind of fruit tree imaginable that we can grow.
We have muscadine, which is a southern grape. We have scuppernongs. We have all these different things growing on our property.
I even have pomegranates that I harvested a few today.
Wow, my goodness. And so those you're able to can as well, so they don't, so you don't lose a lot. Just two.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just two of you. You have no children?
Yes. Well, Wanda has five, and I have two. But they all live way away from us. Wanda and I just basically live here, you know, by ourselves, take care of everything by ourselves.
I tell everybody we do our own stunts. Do everything ourselves.
That's right. Plus, do your children just think you guys are just cuckoo and way off the rails, or are they understand what you're doing?
Oh, no, they totally understand what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
My two girls, the oldest one has a garden, and she just got chickens. She has had goats and things in the past, but she homeschools, and she does do gardens every year.
Oh.
She's just as into it as I am. My youngest understands everything as far as my youngest daughter, but she doesn't have gardens. But if she can get something to put in her freezer, she does. My three boys, kind of whatever happens, they know how to garden. It's just whether they do. My oldest son does garden some, and Danny's daughters.
One of them just, she's an architect, and she just works all the time. I mean, she basically works herself to death. The other one is a realtor, and she works a lot, but she does occasionally try to grow things in containers and stuff because she knows that she was raised this lifestyle, and she knows how to do it if she has to do it.
And she got a bunch of tomatoes from us, and she canned, it was over 100 jars of tomatoes, tomato sauce, salsa, spaghetti sauce, whatever. She canned a lot of tomatoes from us this year.
Wow. So you mentioned you have like thousands of jars. How do you protect them from, I don't know, from anything?
Well, most of our stuff is underground.
Mm-hmm.
We have an underground facility that we keep everything in to help control the temperature, moisture and light and stuff like that that's all in it. It holds a constant temperature.
And so far, that's worked really well for us. The only hold up with that would be if we ever had an earthquake, and you can't predict
that. Can't predict that.
But they're pretty rare in Mississippi, huh, earthquakes?
Oh, yeah, they're really rare.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. What's the shelf life, though? How do you keep track of that many jars and keep up with it without losing product?
I take and put on the lid of everything I can, what it is, and the date I canned it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want, if something happened to me and I passed away, and somebody, and say Danny passed away, and somebody came in, they don't know what's in that jar. They have no clue what the date is or anything. If they came into our house and needed food after we're gone, whatever, it has what it is and the date. And we use a 5-year,
okay.
Rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our stuff never makes it to the 5 years. But we try to rotate out every year, and I bring all the 5-year-old stuff up, and we put the new stuff back, and it's just a rotation. I tell people, rotate, rotate, rotate.
My goodness. Yeah. So how did you determine just by trial and success of how long a particular product lasts, the shelf life? How do you, by the pH?
Yeah,
or?
No, it's basically trial and error. Now, we've ate a lot of stuff that's way older than 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that research shows that anything older than 5 years, the nutritional value of it begins to decrease as long as it's in the jar. So
I've opened pickles that were 8 years old, I believe, a couple of years ago. There was some that had been there before I was here. Danny's previous wife had canned them.
Mm-hmm.
And we found them on the top shelf when we were rotating out things, because we were in the process of taking everything out that was older that year. And these pickles had just gotten stuck. And they were 8 years old, and we tested them. I did. He did. They were really, really stout, vinegary taste, but they were still edible.
They were edible. Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with them. If you were starving, they would have been fine, but they were very injury.
So what about staples? Do you do rice or pasta or beans, those kind of things? Do you buy those from time to time and store those?
We have, I have a gluten issue, so there's no...
wheat, right?
We stay away from the pastas and things like that. We do dry can some beans. We do have some rice, not a lot, because we're not big rice eaters. Things like cornmeal, corn flour. I have my own corn that I created 20-something years ago. It's called Danny Corn that we grow ourselves. We sell it on our Etsy store for people to try. Makes the best cornmeal, corn flour, grits, things like that is made from it.
And we also do a lot of, I try to buy up, this is one thing I do buy, is almond flour and rice flour. And if something happens, we do have ways, we have machines that we can hand grind rice. That's one reason we do have rice, is I can hand grind it and make rice flour. We also have the beans stored, so we can hand grind and make bean flour if necessary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Dan, have you all ever heard of the term with corn or other, with the nixtamalization, where they soak it in the lye and theoretically makes it more digestible? Are you familiar with that?
Yes, that's what they do with hominy whenever they make it. They put in a lime solution to make it where it's more digestible for people who have problems with that.
Yeah.
I made that years ago. I used to make it and can it because my kids love it. They love hominy.
Yeah, yeah. Corn, you know, with all the bad raps with the GMOs and stuff, and corn appears to be a pretty good food, isn't it? I mean, if you can get, like you have, some area, maybe heritage, kind of old, really, you know, the real seeds and the real corn?
Well, corn is a great filler. It's very low in protein. It really doesn't, I mean, it doesn't have a lot that it can do for the human body other than just a small amount of protein. But the biggest issue with corn is, like you mentioned, is now that they've got so much genetically modified organisms in it, that it's very toxic to the human system. It actually mutates in the gut now. So,
yeah,
we try to stick strictly with an heirloom variety that is but basically all we grow is my corn. We don't really buy any other corn to plant other than maybe some sweet corn.
And your corn is called Danny's Corn. And where people find that?
On our Etsy store, deepsouthhomestead.etsy.com.
deepsouthhomestead.etsy.com. Spell that.
E-T-S-Y.
Oh, E-T-S-Y. Okay. deepsouthhomestead.etsy.com?
Yes.
And that's your store. And so there's Danny Corn. This is something that you developed and hybridized it or heritage. What is it?
It's an heirloom corn that I created years ago.
Huh.
That it returns back true to itself. Now, if you grow it the way I showed to grow it in the videos, it can get up to 16 feet tall. I mean, Ooh. It's huge. It can be as big as your arm. This stuff is massive.
Really? Oh, so these are just seeds. You sell the seeds?
Yes.
It may be out right now
because people have bought so much. But we also sell, we work with the native, the Cherokee Nation. We're actually trying to help them get a pumpkin back into existence. It almost went extinct. It's called a Cherokee Tan pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
That small pumpkin that can actually last for a year just sitting on a shelf in a cool, dark place and still be good.
No kidding.
It's similar to a Seminole. They have the same genetic parents in the past, but the Cherokee Tan has its unique distinctions, and one of it is the flavor.
Yes.
We had both, and we tested them, and we love the Cherokee Tan better than the Seminole, and most everybody that's tried both agree, and it's been a great thing for us to help them, the Cherokee Nation, get this back into existence. We had somebody gift us the seeds many years ago. And these things grow like crazy.
Yeah, they're very, you can get up to 20 and 30 pumpkins per plant if you really take care of it.
My goodness. One of our listeners wants to know if you would please explain in more detail the idea of this, would you say, double boiler to can the more high pH vegetables, squash and things like that. How does that work, and what's that device called?
It's called a pressure canner.
Uh-huh.
They make several different types of them. Some of them have just a weighted jiggler that goes on top of it, and some of them have a gauge that goes on top of it. Anything below 1,000 foot elevation usually cans at around 15 pounds of pressure. Anything higher you go, the more weight it requires to be able to pressure can safely. In the ball book, they have all this stuff in the ball book. It tells you when you're pressure canning something, what weight to use at what elevation for what length of time.
I would highly recommend everybody get a, if they're going to can anything, whether it's water bath or pressure canning, that they get a ball blue book for canning.
Okay.
They have many, you can look on Amazon. They have many, many of them. They've been out for 40, 50 years. I have one that was 40 years old. Somebody sent me. The information in the 40-year-old book is as good as the new information now.
All right, a real classic kind of nitty-gritty. I mean, the ball company, they know how to can, right? This is what they do.
This is what they do.
Ball Blue Book. So people want to get that before they mess around with it. So what's the difference between a pressure canner and a pressure cooker?
Pressure cooker is not near as large.
Okay.
You can only cook, like, in a pressure cooker, you would put your chicken in there and pressure it down real quick, or you could put rice and beans in there and pressure it down. But the canner is bigger. It usually, the one we have is a Presto canner, and it'll hold 7 quarts or 9 pints. The little small cookers won't hold anything like that.
So a Presto canner will hold 7 quarts?
Yes.
Wow. That's a lot of food.
You can get the All-American canner, which will hold 14 quarts.
So even Patrick here, who's a single guy still, still single after all these years. I don't know how that happened. I could get like summer squash, right? Summer squash at the farmer's market when they're really happy and they're inexpensive. And I could cook them up with a little bit of spices or herbs or something, right? And then I could can those guys, pressure can them, and then I would have those. I mean, you could do like 15, 20, 30 jars for a guy like me. That would be forever.
Yeah, you don't pre-cook them ahead of time.
You don't.
Mix all this stuff up, put it in a jar, and when you pressure can it, it actually cooks it while you're pressure canning.
Oh, my goodness.
There's some vegetables like squash that you do get some water boiling. You put the squash cut up over in the water for 2 to 3 minutes and take it back out so it seals the flavor and the color.
It's called blanching.
Blanching.
And then you put it in your jars, and if you want seasoning in them, like you were saying, you put that in the jars, cover them with fresh boiling water, and then pressure can. About 40 minutes.
Are there good books that just kind of walk through what you've just told us? Or is that still in the Ball Blue Book?
Yeah, it's all in the Ball Blue Book.
Yeah. Plus our videos.
Plus our videos at Deep South Homestead, yeah.
We'll tell you how to do all that. Man, that just makes really... And it's not that much work, is it?
Depends on what you're canning. Now, if you're canning something like sweet potatoes or carrots, yes, it's a lot of work because you got to peel them, blanch them, and then slice them all up, and then put them in jars, and then pressure can them.
Got to do the whole deal, right?
Yeah. Now, if you're doing tomatoes or green beans, no, it's a piece of cake.
Sure, because then you're back to just the water bath, right, Danny? Where you're just, because the pH, do you have a pH meter and you check things?
No, we've just done it so long, we just know.
you just know.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a couple of comments from people watching on YouTube this morning. South Mississippi is full of underground springs, good fresh water, and my water is high iron too. Oh.
Yep, that's accurate.
And he says, can't wait to grow my Danny corn and pumpkins next year. Oh, there you go. Here's another comment. I found one last jar of fig butter my mom had canned about 13 years ago. She had already passed several years before, so this was a special treat. It tasted perfect. I'll be done.
Yep.
Mm. And I guess, generally, you could just pop a can of something, and you kind of, does it generally grow mold if you've just waited too long, or how would you know not to poison yourself?
That, Patrick, that's something that the federal, I hate to say this, but the powers to be, let me say that, they've scared everybody in the world to death that you're going to poison yourself. I mean, if you use good common sense, if the lid on the jar doesn't pop when you take it off, well, you know that it's lost its seal, you don't eat it. You know?
And I tell everybody, when you open the jar, make sure you look at it first. Don't shake the jar when you're doing anything. Open the jar, look at it. If it has stuff growing inside, throw it away. But if it looks good, then you smell of it. If it's tomatoes, it's going to smell like tomatoes. If it don't smell like tomatoes, throw it away. Then you can do the taste test. If it looks and all right and it smells good, you can take a tiny bite of it right quick. And if it has a weird taste, throw it away. I mean, yeah. That's my three things: look, smell, and taste.
So even if you have a tiny bit and it's kind of gone south, so to speak, you won't kill yourself just doing a tiny taste.
No.
I mean, you get worse than that when you go to a restaurant.
That's right. I understand. Whoa.
Yeah, if you eat the whole jar, it's another thing.
You eat the whole jar, now maybe you're going to get really sick. You probably won't die, but you probably get sick.
So you all don't go... You all don't go to the store to buy anything, pretty much.
Not much. If we go to the store, it's just to pick up something that, like salt. We can't make salt.
Yeah.
We can make our own butter and we can make our own cheese, but we don't right now. Right now we don't. Our cows are not milking. I mean, they have calves on them, so we're not getting any milk off of them or anything. But we can make our own milk. We can get our own cheese and butter and stuff.
And with Danny's dairy issue, we usually use almond milk. So I usually buy the almond milk right now. It's shelf stable, so it stays in the on the shelf until I need it. And we don't drink milk.
No, we don't drink milk. We have a belief that my daddy raised me and told me, he said, son, the human people are the only people on the earth that actually have it wrong. He said, every other mammal on the earth, as soon as they're weaned, they never drink milk again. And humans just continue to drink it for some reason.
We're the only mammals that drink milk kind of people, and you just don't think it's a good food, huh?
No, if you ever look at it under a microscope, unless you're using now like the Dexters, and that's one thing I'll say about the Dexters and the goats. The goats have naturally homogenized milk. The Dexters have an A2 milk, which makes it very easy to digest.
Yeah.
Tolerant.
Folks, I don't know if you've ever seen these Dexters, but talk about these before we go. These are really beautiful. They're kind of red, aren't they? If I remember, I saw some years ago around here, Dexters.
Some are, some are not. It just depends on what breed of Dexter you get. We have black ones and we have red ones. We have both of them. They almost become extinct here a few years ago. There was only like 5,000 left in the world. They are probably one of the most hardy cows that you can raise on a homestead or a small piece of property. They can actually eat weeds and be just as healthy as they are if they lived on perfect grass. I mean, they're great foragers like goats. They eat leaves out of trees and stuff like that. They're very hardy.
And both our mamas have delivered safely, and we have two that are going to have babies, one probably within the next month. So far they've been very healthy, they've delivered well, and we have one bull and
we have six cows right now.
Yeah.
But we have one that is a Jersey Dexter cross, just specifically for milk purposes.
And then what do you do with the milk? Because you don't drink it, so you're going to make butter?
Yeah, we make butter. We use it to feed other animals. You can give it to your chickens. I mean, there's lots of things that you can do with it.
So I was going to ask you about fat. What do you all do for fat in your diet?
We raise hogs. When it comes time to butcher, we butcher our own hogs. We render our own lard out. And we use lard in everything that we do because it's a myth that lard is bad for your heart, bad for your veins and stuff. That's all a myth.
And it actually makes everything
taste better.
Oh, yeah. And we know that. It's good for you, right? This whole fat thing. How did you get so up on it, you two, with understanding some realities about nutrition and not buying into all the, you know, fat is bad stuff? Where were you in your life when this was going on?
Well, the best thing you can do is learn to talk to the elderly people. You see that people that live to be 90 and 100 years old, you ask them, what's the secrets of life? And you let them tell you, and you pay attention, because there's actually lots of people out there that are perfectly healthy in their 90s and 100s, and lived on this stuff. They were born on it. They were raised on it. Now, I will say this. A lot of them have gotten complacent. My dad was one. My dad just passed away at 80-something years old, and he would tell me, now, son, there's nothing wrong with this, and there's nothing wrong with that, like, commercial fertilizers is one of them. And I said, well, Dad, when you had commercial fertilizer when you were growing up, it didn't have all the salt in it that they have now and all. And he said, salt? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, why they got salt in it? And I said, well, it helps it. It's a filler, and it helps it to dissolve. And I said, you have to be careful that you don't oversalt your soil whenever you use it. So some things have changed from the older generation.
A lot of your foods have,
like my dad told me one time I had some lice get on one of my pigs. He said, son, just put some burnt motor oil on it. It'll take care of it. So my dad, with the synthetic and the stuff that they put in motor oil now, I can't do that anymore. It's not like it was when you were a kid.
Yeah, wow. So have you talked to a lot of the older folks healthy that did cod liver oil in their diet?
Yes, more people who did cod liver oil I talked to were from up north. Not so many people down south did it. Down here, it was there was things like castor oil was given to you. You were wormed every year down here.
They thought that was the deal. Every year you got castor oil, whether you needed it or not.
Yeah, you had to be wormed.
Oh, that just made the worms leave the building with Elvis?
Yes. in a hurry.
No kidding. I didn't realize that. I love castor oil. I didn't know that just castor oil alone would chase out the little boogies. Really?
Yeah.
Take a big dose, though.
Yeah, you take a big dose. You better stay home when you do.
It'll do. Have you guys ever heard of ingesting pure pine gum spirits of turpentine for things?
I've used turpentine, but it's mainly to drive out white worms in my, like dogs and stuff like that.
Turpentine was a big business down here.
It was a big industry down here for many, many years until all the old growth longleaf pine timber went out.
And what did people do with it? Did they take it internally down there?
No, they mainly used it down here for paint thinners and, you know, it mixed in. We had what was called turpentine plants down here where they actually processed that stuff and made many chemical products out of it.
I'll be done. We have a regular guest, you two, that Dr. Jennifer Daniels, an MD. She's in Panama because she got tired of being harassed by the federales, you know, a natural doctor. And she's real big on pure pine gum spirits. You know, the real thing, you all, where you just kind of stick it, you know, you just take the sap from the pine tree and then distill it. That's all they do, right? And it's been used for, hundreds of years. Back in the slave days of taking some of this product, just the pine gum spirits, pure pine gum spirits for all kinds of things, including parasites. Pretty fascinating. Pretty fascinating.
Yeah. Well, my granny did that. When I was little, one of my best memories is every time we skin a knee or anything, she had a pine tree in her yard that she kept the bark scraped back. And if we got any kind of bobos we skint, something, she says, go to the pine tree.
Really?
And she get pine tar and put on it.
Oh, so she did pine tar and put it right on your hurt.
Yes.
That's fascinating. Well, y'all, it's just really fun talking to you. I'm just so grateful that you came on and we were able to make this work and that you came into town just to do it. So, I don't even know how you can survive out there on your land with no internet and you don't get to go on Facebook and yell at people. I just don't know how you do it. I just don't understand.
Well, the internet works. It just does. Our live streams on Saturday night are kind of buffering somewhat, but mm-hmm. people tolerate it because they love us, I guess. And we do have enough internet system that we can upload our videos and things like that.
I see.
It's just that it's really bad internet. It's not.
Yeah, let's put it this way. If we get 1 meg, we're doing really good.
Wow. And then how can people watch your live stream?
Yes, that's every Saturday night at 8 o'clock Central Time.
Okay.
At night, 8 p.m.
They click on
Deep South Homestead YouTube channel, and we're there.
Yes.
Wow. And you do that through the satellite, and it works.
Well, it buffers, like she said, and a lot of people just come back and watch the replay later. You know, but we have lots of faithful people that like to be in the chat. They like to chat with one another from all over the nation. They like, you know, because they all know one another through the chats and stuff, and they go to these homesteading conferences and stuff. So a lot of them have met each other. Back when we had all the homesteading conferences, they would come here and meet us personally and get to know everybody. So they love being in the chat.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, if for some reason, I don't know, say you had to, yeah, just hypothetically, if you had to move, you know, I don't know, Federales came in and said everybody in Mississippi has to get a vaccine and you wanted to move. Just kidding. Where would you go these days? What would your choice be if you had to move?
It'd be the Southern Missouri Ozarks.
Really? Ah. And why there?
It seems to be, according to the, I don't know how much you're into stuff, but if you've ever looked at the Navy flood maps,
yeah,
they're what's called safe zones in the United States. A lot of ex-military people that are key, important people, the military advises them to move to the Southern Ozarks.
Hmm.
Whether it's Northern Arkansas or Ozarks or Southern Missouri Ozarks, they ask them to go to that place because they're saying that should the New Madrid go off or should whatever happen,
yeah,
and the oceans actually rise, that is probably, between there and Kansas, all out through that area, is probably going to be one of the safe zones.
Is that right? Interesting. That's beautiful country, too, up there, right?
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
That northern Arkansas, what is that, northwest Arkansas up in there? Whoo, man, that's pretty. Yeah.
By Bull Shoals up in that area. Up there.
Okay, you guys, we're going to have all of your links on the show page so when people find you, they can click. And it's just been an honor to talk to you. And you guys are doing great, man. You're my heroes. So thanks for being here. And I'd like to do it again sometime. We'll just keep in touch. And now that I have your number, and thanks for coming aboard. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick. We really enjoyed being on your show today.
Well, you did great. We'll see you real soon. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you.
Danny and Wanda King. Man. See, I want to go do what they're doing. I mean, in the country now, but I mean further out. Okay, we're going to have all of the information, deepsouthhomestead.com, where you can watch the video, where you can buy Daddy's corn. We'll have all of this on the front page, on the show page, so you don't have to scout around for it. Okay, we're going to get set up here and talk to Dr. Mark Circus. He's going to come on board, and we're going to have some fun. So you just stay right there. You just don't go away. Don't go away. Don't you go away.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.